This is the Dedicate Recruitment podcast series with Liz Nevitt, bringing you topical news and expert insight into the world of recruitment and employment within education from both private and public sectors.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Beyond Education podcast. Today we'd like to welcome a very special guest, Gareth Brisbane, the recruitment manager at Reach2 Multi Academy Trust. Today we'll be talking all things recruitment, but also how that role sits embedded within a multi academy trust and the successes and challenges of attracting teaching and support role talent. Gareth is very well placed as his background is within an education family, his mum being a teacher. And so it was quite natural for him to progress into a career which was centred around education. After working with numerous recruitment agencies and also running his own business, his career has come to this point as a key manager within a multi-academy trust, where he's not just focusing on recruitment but also human resources as a whole and understanding how the people element of an organisation really works and how he can contribute to that. So that's something we'll be discussing today. And Gareth, welcome to the show.
Pleasure.
Great to have your company. You and I go back a little ways because we have worked for Capita Education, as it was back in the day, in varying roles, and you were the manager for the secondary education team as one of your final posts there, weren't you, before you moved on, where you currently are now working at Reach2 Multi Academy Trust, the largest primary trust in the UK?
Yes, yep. 59 schools currently, and opening number 60 in the next couple of months.
Brilliant. That's good to hear, though. Even still, in what's been going on, it's great to know that things are still moving as they should be in a kind of like a normal climate. You have a wealth of experience coming from education, and also, as you said yourself, your family is embedded within education too. So, probably not that easy for you to move away from education, really.
Oh, very, very difficult at times, but it I like to think it gives me an interesting perspective over a number of years, and getting feedback from other people and being able to talk things through with other people has given me some interesting insights.
Yeah, well, that's something I'd like to start with, actually, with your knowledge, kind of like growing up in that environment as well, and working within education, both as a recruitment consultant yourself, and now as an on-site key member of the team in recruitment. How has that kind of stood you in a good position, really, with what you do now?
I think it's helped a lot with underlying knowledge. And I mean, even when I was at school and I was actually considering going into teaching as a profession, I was, I wouldn't say I was warned off it, but I was given the very, very clear knowledge of what teaching was at the time and the restrictions that were placed on teachers and how difficult it was for somebody to operate in, I suppose, in an open and free way. I really, really enjoyed, when I was at school, I really enjoyed sport and wanted to go into teaching as a secondary PE and biology teacher, and actually worked for a little bit of time at two schools, one primary school and one secondary school, to gain some experience and to assist me in making my decision of whether I wanted to move forward. But ultimately, it was the circles that I was in at the time, social circles, that convinced me that at that time it wasn't something that I wanted to do. So put it on hold, but always had a passion to be involved in some way in education. And this just seemed to fit.
Yep, you have to sort of try before you buy in some ways, don't you? And the fact you had that experience. So, but it didn't put you off education completely. You still kind of had your...
No, I think education is a very worthy industry to be in. And it's nice to be able to be somewhere where I feel that you're giving something back to society. And that's why I wanted to work within education specifically. To be able to, in some way, have a influence people who are going to be around long after I'm gone, is there's a really good feeling behind it.
I think working when I recruited in commercial sector and moving to the education sector, and you know that, you know, it's a very, very important part of our education is pivotal to all of us. It's very, very, it's a massive impact on children. It shapes us, it molds us. Good teachers, good leadership is really paramount. But when you're working with them as well from a recruitment point of view, and you know, you hear that passion all the time, it's valid and valuable sector to be involved in. And it's great to work in partnership with people like that. And when you've got that passion, everyone's motivated for the same end, and that's quality of teaching, however it looks. So recruitment for you, give me your version of recruitment as a consultant, being working in partnership with schools, to actually working as part of a trust. You are now a pivotal part of their team. So what's the difference?
I suppose the level of understanding you get exposed to a lot more when you're working inside an organisation than as an exterior consultant. The level of trust as well is very much different. You're also able to really feed into things, so to get involved with areas of the organisation that are not necessarily directly part of what you do, but sit on the periphery. So as an exterior consultant, you would just deal with the recruitment campaign. But as an internal member of staff, you get involved with all kinds of different discussion. And the organisation is always looking for a feed-in from people that work in other areas as to how certain processes and certain schemes of work and things that are being introduced will affect the different areas. So it's really, really nice to be involved in those kind of discussions as well.
And also with the changes happening in processes and procedures, you're going to have that insider knowledge, aren't you? So that's also going to, but that will also affect the way you work in your role with regards to talent attraction. Because give us a breakdown what a typical day would be like for you as a...
Well, the joy of it is that most days are different. There's a lot of policy. There's a lot of looking into what we're doing in the future. There's a lot of communicating with schools. But it could be you might be talking to, or I might be talking to a head teacher about where it's best to place adverts for particular roles. And then the next call that I take might be to do with a school looking for advice on visas and the visa process. And then the next thing I might be doing is talking to universities about their student process and us working with universities. So every single day can be different, which is really, really nice. No day is standard. And then it's communicating all of the information that you've got to the wider audience within the trust. So letting the head teachers know what's going on within the recruitment calendar, what's happening with universities, what's happening with potential training providers, and how they can use things like the apprenticeships levy to aid their retention strategy. And to offer more for their staff. And then it could be writing briefing papers for the Board of Trustees to talk to them about the high level view of recruitment and what's happening within the marketplace. Also predicting or trying to predict what's going to happen next. So at the moment, talking to the trustees about where we're going to sit for September and the vacancies that we might have for September, and how COVID-19 has had an impact on that, and what could be the impact over the next couple of years. So it just making sure that everybody's got the information so that we're, to a certain extent, in front of the curve when these things are happening. So it's all very different.
It's a very big role, We've always said that, having known you, and like, and it's grown and it evolves, and also with what's been going on, coming the other side of COVID as well, how that's impacted on the schools and the opening plans to schools as well. How does that look like for your primary schools in September? Are you confident as a trust to have it, all the children back?
I think it very much depends on each school's individual position, and the trust stance is that we've always, it's always about finding the best for the student. And if that means that a school doesn't open for a period of time or doesn't open year groups because it's not safe to do so, then I'm sure the trust will make the decision to do that. But everything is risk assessed when we're sort of looking at expanding the number of students that we have within a school. So everything is risk assessed, and it's on the basis of those risk assessments that any decision is made. And obviously we're listening to the science and the government guidance all the way through, but it's very, very individual.
Yeah, that's understandable. Just going back to your comment about the apprenticeship programs as well, how has the uptake been on those programs? Is it kind of increasing every year, because they are such a great scheme for people to be able to be supported and learning a skill as well, especially within teacher training? So how does that look?
Well, with I think it was slow to start off with, because the understanding wasn't there about exactly what the apprenticeships levy could be used for. But that has changed, and we have lots of different apprentices across the trust doing lots of different things within school, being able to offer somebody who's a level two support within classrooms professional development so that they can move up to become a level three, and that being financed entirely through the apprenticeships levy is a really, really good tool. It means that we can retain the staff that we want and push them forward and develop them. And for that individual, it really shows that we want to look after them, that we want to take care of them. And that's the same within lots and lots of different disciplines. So it's used as much as possible. It could potentially be used more in the future, and I'm sure it will be, as the number of and the range of different positions and qualifications that you can use expands. But it's a fantastic tool, and one that we're really striving to use and use to its capacity.
Yeah, it is a positive when it gains that momentum as well, and it's affects retention in, like you say, in a positive way, because when you're trained organically, then it's that person's likely to invest more in that school or that organization anyway, and I think it can only be positive. So with education right now, there's always a shortage of teachers, good teachers, especially core subjects as well. How does Reach 2 stand out against everybody else to try and attract those teachers?
I truly believe that the offering that Reach 2 has is probably one of the best in England within any multi-academy trust. I know we've got fantastic CPD, and that's something that time and time again, when I speak to students at universities, they're very conscious about where they want to go and what they want to do. And being able to say to them that we've got a structured flight path that could take them from being a newly qualified teacher right the way through to being a head teacher and beyond, that really holds a lot of weight with them. And I think that is one of our biggest attraction tools. Also, the fact that we are such a large organisation has real impact as well. And teachers and students and school SLT, knowing that they can take a position with Reach 2, and even if they want to develop themselves in the future, they may be able to move to another school within the Reach 2 family, because there are relocations. We do relocate people on a fairly regular basis, and all of our vacancies get published internally. So there is an upward push for people to progress and to move forwards with their careers. And it's a place that you can really do that. If you want to move forwards, it's down to you, your ability, and how much you want it, really.
Yeah.
So I think that's a real plus for the trust, and a great way of attracting people in. And I think that's one of the reasons that we attract people. Another one is the area that we work in. I don't mean geographically, but with the kind of communities that we work in. We're quite an ideological organisation. So we work with the bottom percent of students socioeconomically around the country. So we work with some of the most exposed communities. And our mission is to go in and to raise educational awareness and aspiration, and to show the students that we've got that education is an important thing and something that can lead them out of poverty. Mm. And anybody coming into the education industry that really, really wants to make a difference, they can go to a Reach 2 school and know that they can really make a difference. And we do get people, I get people that approach me that say, I'd like to work for Reach 2 specifically because of this. So it is something that the public know. Mm. So that's a really, really good attraction tool.
And talking about those socioeconomic factors as well, those communities, do you have a much stronger presence in those communities, do you think, compared to other schools because of the reputation that you have and also the staff that you have within those schools going out and driving that message out as well with regards to how the children can be supported, you know, cementing those relationships with parents?
Yes, I do. I think the schools themselves do a fantastic job. And I don't know how many of the parents would know a school is specifically a Reach 2 school. Because one of the things that is a real plus within the education system and the MAT system is that we don't rebrand our schools. So each one of our schools is individual. They all have their own uniform. They all have their own insignia or logo. The core values are Reach 2 values, and the senior leadership team, the head teachers and the teaching staff and the support staff all work towards those values. But that's what drives them. From the outside of a school, you wouldn't necessarily know that it's a Reach 2 school. Which is nice. It just means that the values that we have, although they are spread out and they're embedded in each of the individual schools, the schools get to operate in a way that is right for that community. So they can concentrate on the things that are part of our values to make that community better.
It stands alone, doesn't it, on its own merit. That's what you want a school to do.
It does. The schools are individuals but part of the bigger Reach 2 family.
What to you did education look like before COVID, and now what does it look like to you post COVID?
Difficult question.
That's the question, isn't it? It's a big one.
It is.
Do you think that some schools were kind of traditional prior to COVID, and like it's shaken the education sector up and brought them more to the 21st century?
Well, I think it has shaken the education sector up. Not anybody within the education sector was prepared for distance learning for all of the children, or pretty much all of the children within schools across the country, was not something that anybody ever expected. I think it's got people thinking about what the possibilities could be in the future. And although we talk about returning to some kind of state of normal when this is all over, if indeed it is ever over, what will that new normal look like? And will it involve more remote learning? Will the drive be for students to manage their learning more independently? That's something that schools haven't had to think about to this kind of extent before. So I think it will change the system a bit. how that looks at the moment, it's very difficult to say. I don't think the change will have completed until we're way past the period of infection.
And that, like you say, doesn't look like there's a cut-off point at all, because it's just open at the moment. So more reactionary situation, isn't it? No one can really plan, apart from the phasing in September. Let's hope that all goes as it can with primary and the secondary schools. How that looks, we don't know. And even speaking to heads of schools, they don't know either. But we'll see how that pans out. And it just makes it just a really sort of difficult situation, doesn't it? But what I think I've seen with regards to the vulnerable children as well, and not having that access to early years and making that a priority, was really essential. Also with children that don't have PEC at home as well, and aren't able to do home learning, and they've got that support to a certain degree. So that's kind of highlighted a number of areas where it was, I think, an urgent sort of situation, which has brought that into much more control for both the government and the schools as well. What do you think about that? Do you think that that should have been done long before now?
Well, in a utopian situation, you would want everybody to have the facilities to be able to learn at home. It's something that would cost schools and the government a lot of money to be able to do, and to be able to do thoroughly. But education is such an important thing. It would be great to get to that position where everybody has everything that they need to be able to learn. And it would add so many more people of quality to our labour market that it's just immeasurable. But it would be fantastic to have that kind of level playing field across all of the society within the UK. Whether we'll ever get to that position or not, I don't know.
No.
But it would be great to be there.
Yeah, again, it's that question mark, and we're putting things in place with the resources that our country has as well. And it's quite sad, some of the issues that have been raised in certain areas, but doing the government and schools are doing the best to support them, and that's got to be, it's moving everything forward as well. And like you say, it'd be great if everyone was on the same perspective, wouldn't it? But
it would.
Yeah. Is that, like you say, more money? Where does that money come from? So what are your plans then with regards to kind of moving forward and attraction, talent attraction as well, teaching staff? So you're still recruiting now for teachers to start in September?
Yep, partially. Most of the recruitment for September has already been done, which was a challenge through COVID-19. Because everything had to be done remotely. It's helped us to develop remote interviewing and remote assessment, which was something within education that lots of people don't do, lots of organisations don't do, unless they're looking at overseas teachers and Skype interviewing or Zoom interviewing or any interactive way of speaking to people who are at a great distance. Trying to get round, probably the biggest thing that we came up against was trying to get round the need for a classroom or lesson observation, which is the standard within the education sector to judge how people's capacity, trying to work out different ways of assessing capacity and skill has been challenging.
How did you get around that? Did you have teachers sending videos of themselves in a virtual classroom?
So we've done a range of things, lots and lots of in-depth questioning at interview, looking at references very, very carefully and being very thorough with all of our pre-screening. Just doing what we do, but doing more of it.
Right.
Place of lesson observation. So just trying to guarantee as much as possible that the person that we're looking at can do what they say that they can do. It is difficult when you can't see somebody in practice in a classroom teaching a group of children. But then one lesson doesn't necessarily guarantee that person is going to be absolutely fantastic either.
Yeah.
So it's still making a judgment, but making a judgment with the information that we've got.
Yeah, you've got to, haven't you? Because it's kind of, this whole process, it's over projecting as well. Guards, when you're like having a Zoom call, Teams call, you're getting a face, but you haven't got that tangible person. So yeah, you've got potential there, but you don't know which way it's going to go, be it teaching, be it any kind of professional that you're interviewing. And I found that people have to over project as well, and there's been interesting conversations that have come out of it too. But it's great though. The people, so the teachers that you have pointed, have they come into school though, just to have a tour, like a social distancing tour?
Some have, where it's been safe to do so, some have.
Yeah.
Again, it's all driven by what is safe, and how can we get people to have a look around schools and to have a look at the different things that we do when a school is on a reduced student roll with not as many members of staff in the school, and everybody's being very, very protective about who comes into the environment. So it's not been easy.
Yeah.
Because as an applicant, you want to know about the kind of environment that you're going into.
Yeah.
And as an organisation, you want to know as much as possible about the individuals that you're looking at. So when you can't meet people face to face, or there's barriers to meeting people face to face, it is tough.
But did you find with onboarding as well, remote onboarding and Zoom calls, that it sped the process up though as well with regards to interviews? Because you're not actually logistically trying to get somebody on site, are you? It's a case of, right, are you free? It's more immediate in the next couple of days and have an hour spare, etc. But do you find that it's been a faster pace?
Generally, yes. Any kind of communication where travel isn't involved has sped up. Being able to have interactive meetings, departmental meetings, has been easier because everybody is on a platform to be able to talk and to meet almost instantaneously. I mean, that way, yes, it has sped things up. Getting people to sign and send back documentation has slowed down slightly because that's something that they would normally do when they attend an interview.
Right.
So relying on other people to be able to complete what they need to do on time, and that has slowed down a little bit. But that's very much down to the individual applicant as well.
Yeah. Okay. Reach2 has got a great reputation. I know because I've actually supported yourself and the organisation with regards to candidate presentation. That you've got the values, and everyone really does support each other. And what I found personally is that you're very positive as the internal team, the senior leadership team. You're very positive about each other, and you work to each other's strengths as well. And is there a lot of that with regards to information sharing from heads as well, working regularly to share information in a certain clusters?
Yeah, since we moved to our cluster model and appointed a deputy director of education for each of the clusters, communication has become very, very effective within each cluster. The head teachers meet on a regular basis, again, at the moment, interactively. But when this is all over, we'll probably be more in person.
Yeah.
And discuss things that are happening within the local area and trends within the local area and plans within the clusters. Mm-hmm. And then those head teachers are also involved in regional meetings as well. The deputy directors of education are all involved in cross-cluster meetings,
mm-hmm.
and meetings with other members of the senior leadership team on a very regular basis. At the moment, we hold interactive meetings with all of the school business managers and the head teachers and other members of the school SLT. And we receive updates on everything that's going on together, and all of the different departments feed into those updates. So there's a lot of communication that goes on behind the scene, which makes sure that everybody is involved and informed all of the time. It's very, very effective communication.
So in your role, recruitment and resources manager, it's a very pivotal role. So you work very closely with the HR team as well.
Yes.
What are the challenges and the rewards of your role?
Well, the challenges are a change between different clusters. We're never going to have the same challenges in our Birmingham cluster as we do in our Lowestoft cluster. They cater for very different areas. The demographic, the socioeconomic terms are very different. The outlook of a lot of the parents is very different within the different areas, and the expectation is very different. It's easier to attract somebody to a school that is inland than it is on the coast. And so the way that we work is, or the way that I work is, by coming up with an attraction plan for each of the clusters that changes. So every single term I revisit a conversation with our Deputy Director of Education for a cluster and update them on the labour market as a whole and any cluster variations that I might be seeing. And we come up with a plan to be able to move that cluster forward. Yeah. And it could be very, very different things. So with our cluster in Lowestoft, it's very much more about how we can develop people internally, how we can grow our own talent, because there's very few feeders from outside that feed into our talent pipeline. So it's how can we work with the talent that we've got? How can we push people forward? How can we make the best of what's available to bring the schools up and to help them to improve? In our Birmingham cluster, it might be more to do with how can we attract people from outside of the trust to join? What do we need to do within the local communities to raise awareness of what we're doing and to bring more people on side with what we're doing? Because there is pushback against multi-academy trusts still. And I think there's a lack of understanding about how good multi-academy trusts can be for schools and for local communities, but also how good their offering can be to employees that want to move in from state-maintained schools. So it's a big awareness piece there on what we can do and who we can bring in. So the fundamentals of the recruitment and attraction and retention campaigns are going to be different, but it is working on a cluster-by-cluster basis to make sure the best options possible are taken up by the individual clusters to produce the best result.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when you say about sort of multi-academy trusts against standalone and state schools as well. There is that divisive party, and there are pros and cons in people's minds for both as well. But as a parent myself, with regards to a multi-academy trust, the support you're getting from each of those schools and the information sharing, I think, is paramount as well, because it does provide quality teaching at the end of the day. And rather than, and I appreciate that standalone schools and maintained schools have, they also have their own sort of connections and support as well. But with the trust, it's much more, it's kind of like run like a business in a good way, in that you kind of like have all those schools as subsidiaries, but you are all connected together. And with regards to policies, procedures, the government's input as well, there's more transparency. Do you agree with that?
Yes, so I do. I think there is more transparency within multi-academy trusts than in your local education authority run schools. There's definitely more reporting and there's definitely more scrutiny. So I would think that more transparency comes out of that.
They have, they do have that reporting, don't they, LEA schools, and they are very long-standing, but it's more rigorous controls in that respect and what they're reporting to. So they don't have as much freedom to kind of spend their budgets compared to an academy would, and how you're sharing that information too. And I appreciate that it's a much more stringent reporting on both sides in different ways. But you've got that connection, you've got that, again, that cluster and sharing management, and that's much more collaborative compared to the maintained side. So it's got, it definitely has pros and cons as a parent, really, perspective. Normally you'd have your fairs now and till the autumn, attracting your talent. How are you getting around that? Are you putting together webinars for graduates potentially?
We're putting together lots of webinars and university exposure sessions. So working with the universities that we would normally be visiting for recruitment fairs, which start fairly soon and then run through until sort of January, February time. But we're just making sure that our school staff, our school SLT and our cluster SLT are involved as much as possible. where we've got some universities that are, we've suggested them running sessions that are meet the employer sessions. So using an alumni from one of our local schools to speak to students from their old university and to talk to them about their journey so far with Reach 2, the qualifications that they undertook when they were at university, how things have developed, and also what it's like working for a multi-academy trust like Reach 2, telling some of the fears and addressing some of the anxieties that people would have with moving into their first jobs.
Yeah.
So making sure that there are programs like that happening all across England and that our schools are engaging with the different universities that they need to. And just getting as much information out there for people regarding what we're doing and what's going on within our schools, and bringing as many people in to communicate with us about what they're looking for. So it all still goes on in the background. We can't run recruitment fairs and open schools at the moment, but doing things in an interactive way using technology, we're still getting out there and talking to people.
Good. That's the way it's working differently, isn't it? And you have to still be present, still got to be going through that talent attraction as well for like next year.
No, it never stops.
No, absolutely. Do you work with other MATs as well, Gareth, in respect to sharing ideas with other trusts?
Yeah, we're always collaborating with other organisations and sharing best practice. The idea is that we're, as an education system, we're all moving forward together. So it's definitely not the case that we do things in isolation. We talk to other multi-academy trusts, we share ideas and we develop those ideas. And it might not just be ideas that we're sharing. We can also look at pooling resources to develop different plans, different schemes and different processes. It's important that we all keep communicating and we're not replicating each other's work.
Yeah, did you find there was much more collaboration happening now as well during the pandemic compared to any other time, or has it been just consistent?
I think it's been fairly consistent. I think as more people come into roles within multi-academy trusts that have potentially worked together in the private sector, there is generally more collaboration and more conversation. But I think it's always been there.
I think so. I think seeing, as my role as a recruiter as well, an external recruiter, the last few months speaking to clients and candidates, has been a much more in-depth conversation. People are much more open, I think, because of where it all put us on that flat structure. There was no hierarchy, and people are much more open with regards to, from a client perspective, I found how they want to work, how they sort of enhancing their team, looking at their team's strengths. So there's much more insight compared to just being a business conversation. There's a more of human side to it. Have you found that with your own colleagues as well, with your relationships with them?
Yeah, definitely. Because we're not.
I have to say yes, really, don't you? Because they may listen to this.
because we're not meeting up in person. There's been lots and more small chats and small get-togethers and lots more concentration on individual well-being, which is really, really important all the time, but especially at the moment when we're going through periods of isolation. And as we get back to normal, I'm sure that those conversations will still go on in part. It will be unfortunate to lose them, because we have entered into a period of time where there has been more communication, both personally and professionally. And that's been really, really good for people. Some of our staff around the central team and around schools live on their own, or some live with families and need checking in on. But it's about everybody going through and experiencing what we have for the past 12, 14 weeks together. Yeah. And looking after your colleagues and making sure that they're okay. And I think that's probably happening more on a personal level and a professional level, both inside work and in the community, than it ever has before. Yeah. It would be nice if that stayed.
Yes, that's been my message all the way through. Whenever I speak to people, like on here or in just in life in general, just hopefully people don't have a short memory and we do what we've learned about ourselves and the values, you know, that we've incorporated, they stay. So it's like having that more of a richer relationships, both business and personal as well. So what will you do? What things have you changed? How is it that you're going to keep as a constant now?
Definitely more verbal communication, more conversations with people on a one-to-one basis, and not worrying about asking if people are okay. I think just making sure that every time I speak to somebody, I am actually inquiring after their well-being and making sure that they're in a good position.
Yeah. It's not being a case of being genuine about it because you're that person anyway. It's just being much more aware, isn't it, of people and their position and making sure they are okay and have a genuine purpose for it. This has been great. I think you've got so much experience and knowledge within education. It's brilliant. So if there are candidates out there that want to go into teach training and really think, I hadn't heard of Reach To before, but are aware of some of your schools, how do they need to find you? What can they do to find out a bit more about you?
Well, they can, the first port of call can always be our website. There's lots and lots of information on our website about what the trust does and how we do it, and also about the vacancies that we have. But if somebody is interested in having a conversation with me or with another member of the trust and finding out more, then they can just get in contact with us directly. We're on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn and the trust is on LinkedIn. And we do a lot of work through social media. So there are always ways that people can contact us or simply just send us an email. Send an email to the HR email address that's detailed on the website. And we'll come back to somebody with a response to anything.
Great. Yeah. And your website is?
It's www.reach2.org.
Brilliant. Great, that'll be good. And so I know you've got a number of methods that you attract talent anyway, and it's which are all kind of working in their own way, but it's good to also for listeners that are listening to this podcast that might think, actually, yeah, I'm interested in teaching and want to have a look at your website. You never know what doors that can open.
That's no, absolutely good. Yeah. Happy to talk to anybody.
Brilliant. I know that, Gareth. Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you. With all things education.
No problem at all. Pleasure to be here.
Really good to see you. And thank you again. So we'd like to say have a good day and say to our listeners, to our audience, thank you very much for listening to us too. And we'll see you on the next series.
This podcast has been brought to you by Dedicate Recruitment, specialists in supplying education support staff in the Southeast. We'd love to hear from you. For comments or to connect, find us on social media. Thanks for listening.